Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Erechin Daf Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we begin our new Masechta, Maseches Erechin, a word or two is in order by way of introduction. We will be discussing the issue of making donations or dedications to the Beis HaMikdash. Two major realms that will be featured in our Mishnah are the realm of Erechin and the realm of Nedorim. We will be seeing in our Mishnah, within reach each realm, Erechin and Nedorim, you have the active party, the person making the dedication, and the subject of the dedication. Erechin, we should point out, is a Torah rate that spells out the value of an individual based on gender and age, not based on market value. Therefore, we will call this, refer to it as the Torah rate. These rates are spelled out in Psukim that one finds in Sefer Vayikra. Nedorim, on the other hand, is a reference to market values. Market values are as they sound, and hence the realm of Nedorim refers to all things that have value. A person can dedicate their value to the Beis HaMikdash. As we said a moment before, we have the active individual making the donation and the subject of the donation. With that in mind, we will note in our Mishnah these four categories, two and two. And before we actually learn the Mishnah, let us look at the outside margin of our Gemara in the Shas Ozer. That's the Shas that appears on your screen, which is the cornerstone of Gemara markings. We provide topic headings and structural notes from time to time as needed. In this case, we have combined the two notes into one, and as you can see on the outside margin, we have a reference to a nosei, a topic, and mivneh structure. In the Mishnah, you will notice Roman numerals 1 through 3. These are a chalukas ha-Mishnah, a division of the Mishnah, l'shgimel kvutzos, to three groups, legabi yecholtam lios marichim v'ne'rochim nodrin v'nidrin, regarding their ability to be active donators and subjects of the donation, whether they be Erechin or Nedorim. The Mishnah. Hakol ma'arichin v'ne'rochin noidrim v'nidrin. The word hakol is understood to refer to each one of these categories. In other words, in your mind's eye, or, you know, practically speaking, the word hakol is followed by a colon, and you might be able to see that we've provided such a marking after the word hakol that appears at the top. The word hakol, you will see, is the subject of a discussion in the Gemara. What does the word hakol come to include? The word hakol is a general expression, and many times in the Shas, when a Mishnah uses a word like that, there is something understood to be included even beyond the actual words in the Mishnah. So that will be the discussion of the Gemara. So far, our Mishnah has said that all can. Ma'arichin means make the erech dedication. Ne'rochin be the subject of a dedication. For example, if someone says, I want to give the erech of so-and-so. So that so-and-so, in such an example, is the ne'erach, he's the subject. Nodrin, everyone can make a neder, a market value dedication of whatever. in this case of some whichever person, the nidrin, and they can be the subject of a neder dedication. And who is included? Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Noshim, Vavodim. This includes Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Yisraelim being non-members of the tribe of Levi, women and slaves. Now, we have a, you see there's a comma. That comma indicates a slight pause, because up till this point, the Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Noshim, and Avodim are an unqualified example of each one of these four categories that we, each one of these four examples of Marichin, Erochin, Nojin, Venidrim. Now, as we go on in the Mishnah, we see a Roman numeral number 2, where we'll see now a qualification or a restriction regarding the next group. Tumtum Vandraganus. These are two people whose gender identity is not clear. The Tumtum is someone whose organs of gender are covered over. And Androgynous, in English referred to as androgynous, he has both organs of gender. So these people, Tumtum and Androgynous, Nodrin, Venidrim, as far as market value dedications, they can initiate a market value dedication. They can be the subject of a market value because these people have a market value. If there was, let's say, a Tumtum who was standing on the podium of, let's say, slaves being sold in the market. So the individual's gender, as far as establishing market value, is a very little consequence. We simply look at the person, see his physical capabilities, how much would people pay for him if he were a slave. So these people can be nidrim, umarichin. They can also make an erech dedication of someone else. Avol loy ne'erochin, but not their own. In other words, they cannot be the subject of someone's erech value. So if someone was pointing to an androgynous and said, I want to give the androgynous's erech, it wouldn't take hold. She'eno ne'erach elo hazocher vaday unikevo vadoyis. The only ones that are subject to erech is someone whose gender is definitive, a clear male or a clear female. And that's based on the way the Torah presents the parsha of Erechin. There the Torah mentions Zohar, and it mentions Nekeva, not anything that's vague. The third category, Chirish Shoita V'Koton, the deaf-mute, the imbecile, and the minor. Nidrin V'Nerochin, they can be the subject of someone's neder, market value dedication, and they can be the subject of someone's erech. Avolo Nodrin, Velo Marichin. They cannot initiate dedications, neither of the neder type nor of the erech type. Mipnei She'ein Bohem Das. These are people that are considered lacking awareness, lacking knowledge, and cognizance of what they are doing. So they cannot initiate these types of dedications. As the Gemara begins, we have a topic heading and structural note that accompanies this. You can see on the outside margin, the Nosei Mivne heading, a double underline will appear. And this is emphasizing the word Lasuye. Lasuye means to include. Ha dikotoni bepsichas ha-mishnah ha-koil, ma'arichin v'ne'erochin, nodrin v'nidrim. The word ha-kol that appeared at the beginning of the Mishnah, which was followed by these four examples of vow taking, mi bo hatano l'rabos ayideh ha-koil, who is being included? The Mishnah did specify Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Noshim, Vavodim. That's explicit. But who else is being included by the presence of the word Hakul with regard to each one of these categories? So as we continue in the Gemara, we see the Hakul, we dashed underline that, that's the emphasis of our discussion. And now, Ma'arichin, Hakul Ma'arichin, Lasuye Mai, What is that word coming to include when it's attached to ma'arifim, the ones who initiate the erech donation? Who else can initiate? Answer, la'asuyay, this comes to include muflo hasomach le'ish. This expression appears from time to time in the realm of vows. Very simply, it's a reference to a child, a boy, who is 12 years and a day. That's the year his when he completes his 12th year of age, he enters his 13th year. That year is the year that's somuch, that's next to his becoming an ish. An ish is an adult. A male is established as an adult when he reaches 13 complete years of age, which is referred to as 13 and a day. The day meaning he's entered his 14th year of life. Mufla hasomach l'ish, therefore, is a reference to his age 1 year before adulthood. So the Mishnah is telling us that even though, technically speaking, he is called a katan regarding many areas of halacha, and we saw in the Mishnah that a katan is excluded from being a ma'arif, nevertheless, if he's reached this age, his vow, his erech vow, will take hold, will be binding. And this is understood as follows, that when a person reaches this age, we will check him out, we'll ask him questions to determine whether he has knowledge. If he demonstrates knowledge at this age, it's of a binding nature. Knowledge meaning awareness of what he is saying, awareness of what vows are. Continuing in the Gemara, Ne'erochin, we wrote above this the word hakul, because we're asking right now, what does hakul in the context of ne'erochin come to include? La'asuye mai, what is this including? The Gemara answers, la'asuye, this comes to include minuvel u'mukishchin. People that are minuval, meaning they're disgusting. There's something about them that's reprehensible. It's a situation where you wouldn't be able to get near them, so to speak. Or mukashchin is a person who's bodily afflicted with boils and also fat, in a disgusting state. These are included in ne'erochin, and they have a Torah rate. Even though they don't have a market value, no one would buy them because of their bodily state. Nevertheless, they have an erech. As we said before, erech is dependent only on gender and age. So why do I need a word in the Mishnah to include them? It would seem obvious, because we just said that erech is based on gender and age, and the menuvel and mukishchin have those qualifications. So the Gemara points out, Salka Deita Chamina, without the special inclusion of them through the word Hakol, I would have thought the Pasuk says, Neder Be'erkecho Ksiv. We've included the relevant part of the Pasuk, which is found in Vayikra Chav Zayin, Pasuk Beis, the little star that's encircled into the margin. You can see the parallel star, where the Pasuk says, Ish Ki Afli Neder Be'erkecho Nefoshos Lashem. The word Neder Be'erkecho are next to each other. I would have thought that kol sheyeshno b'domim, domim means market value, and that's referred to by the term neder in the Torah. So anyone who has domim, or shayach to, is relevant to neder, yeshno b'erechin, is included in the realm of erechin as well, the Torah rate. The kol sheyeshno b'domim, all those who are not included in domim, who do not have a market value, people, namely, no one would pay anything for them. I would have thought Eino Be'erichin are likewise not included in Erichin. Komash Melon Nefashos Koldehu. In the Pasuk that we quoted, you also see the word Nefashos, which means has life breath to them. Anyone that has life breath to them. And the Menuvel and Mukishchin have life in them, and therefore they are included in they are ne'erochin. Their value exists, and someone can dedicate their erech value. The next nodrin lasuye mai, the word hakul that is associated with nodrin. Who else is included? Who is included in this? The Gemara says that really there's no one included. that hasn't already been specified. We mentioned Kohanim, Levim, Yisrael, Noshim, Avonim are Nodrim. Why does the word Hakol appear in with regard to Nodrim? Nidrim, it's Derich Lei. It appears because I need the word Hakol to include others with regard to Nidrin, namely the subjects of a Torah, not a Torah value, but of a market value dedication. So Nidrin Lasuyemai. So now the Gemara goes on to ask, and you'll notice to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text a shin that's encircled with a vertical descending dashed line. That indicates that this question lasts a number of lines. So the Gemara is asking, Nidrin, the Hakul Nidrin, as we said, the word Hakul applies to Nidrin as well. Who's being included in as being the subject of a market value dedication? If it's coming to include these types of people, the people with an unclear gender, behedya kotoni luhu, they are spelled out. We don't need the word hakol to include them as being nidrin. The Mishnah spelled it out on the second and third line of the Mishnah. It said tumtum androgynous nodrin v'nidrin. The e lasuye chayru shayte v'koton, and if they are being included, well, behedya kotoni luhu, they too are spelled out very clearly in our Mishnah. They were under Roman numeral number 3 of our Mishnah. And I therefore don't need the word hakul to include them. E lasuye pochus mi ben chodesh, if it's coming to include the case of a child under 30 days of age, behedya kotoni luhu. Well, he's also included under the category of that which is spelled out in the Mishnayos. And if it's coming to include the issue of an idol worshipper, that's behedyo kotonilu. He too is spelled out as someone who could be the subject of a neder, namely his market value is something that someone else could dedicate. So that all of these suggestions don't help us because they're all specified and featured in the Mishnayos in an behedyo means in an explicit fashion. The Gemara answers, lo'olam la'suye, and here we've used our double underline because of what we mentioned before. This is what it's coming to include. Pochos mi ben chodesh. It's coming to include the case of the child under 30 days of age. V'toni, the Mishnah mentions it in a veiled fashion under the word hakol. V'hodar mefarsh, and then in the later Mishnayos, it's then explained explicitly. So with this style of Toni Behodar Meforesh, Rashi points out that this answer could have been given to any one of the other examples as well that were cited in the Mishnah of something being stated in a veiled fashion and then stated later explicitly. Now, as we continue in the Gemara, we encounter a number of different markings, geometric shapes that serve to represent a series of points or points that need to be connected visually. Before learning the Gemara itself, we have a topic, heading, and structural note in the outside margin. In this case, we've referred to the upcoming as Nosei Klali, a very general topic heading, because the length of this sugya, of this discussion, is rather long, and the mivneh, the structural note. So the points that we are about to make will last, and you'll notice we've mentioned in parentheses, ad dalet omet aleph. So we've written, mikan adaf dalet hagemora mevareres. From this point till daf dalet, the Gemara will clarify and explain shnei sdorois shel klolim, two series of rules hamofiim b'mishnayos mimasechtas shonos from different tractates. We'll see two categories or two sets of rules. V'roitzel das b'sidra rishona The Gemara wants to know, with regard to the first of these two sets, Lasuye Mai, to what is being included? And you'll notice that in all of these cases, the word Hakol appears. Ubesidra Shnia, and with regard to the second series of cases that will be presented, Loma Kotoni Hakol Chayovim Be, that everyone is obligated in whatever mitzvah is featured. We'll see that later. And the Mishnah goes on to spell out Konim, Levim V'Yisraelim. In other words, once you tell me that everyone is duty bound to whatever, and we'll see them later. What is intended by spelling out Kohanim Levim V'Yisraelim? As you can see, we go on. We have a little triangle featured. Ad Gimel Amid Aleph Sidra Shel Klolim Shepoisrin BeHakol. So until Gimel Amid Beis, we will see a series of rules that open up with the word Hakol and followed by whatever mitzvah is under discussion. Mi Gimel Amid Beis until Dalet Amid Aleph Hakol. It will say there everyone is chayav in whatever mitzvah, Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim. That will be the second series, and we've noted already at the beginning that is found on Daf Gimel Amid Beis. There will be the use of a diamond at that point, Havlotas HaMitzvah, so that if you have these dapim available, you can scroll over to see how these appear. Ha Gemara Tishal I Hani Lo Mechayvi Man Mechayvi. The Gemara will ask, when the Mishnah says everyone is chayav in a particular mitzvah, and as we said, there's a series of examples of those, and the Mishnayos there go on to spell out Kohanim Vim Yisraelim, we'll be asking if these people wouldn't be chayav, who would be chayav? If these people wouldn't be duty bound, then who would be? In other words, it seems to be obvious then that the Kohanim, once you tell me Hakol Chayovim, everyone's chayv in a mitzvah, that they would be included. Now, we've noted something that is important to us as authors of the Gemara marking system, to look at Rashi on Daf Gimel Omid Beis, Dibur Hamaskel Pshita. If you notice the Rashi, you'll find him 4 lines from the top of Daf Gimel Omid Beis. Rashi does what he does very often throughout the Shas, and that is he makes structural comments. There, reading the Rashi, he says, Ad Hashta, means up till this point on Daf Gimel Amid Beis, Dorish Hakol Lasuye Mai, the Gemara was preoccupied with trying to figure out what does Hakol come to include. And through our marking system and numbering, we will come out to 23 examples of that. So there will have been 23 examples of trying to figure out the Hakol Lasuye Mai, what is it coming to include? Ume Hashta, Rashi says, and from this point, namely from Gimel Amid Beis, at the upper part of the page, Dorish Hanoch Detoni Kohanim Levim Visraelim. The Gemara will be trying to figure out that which is taught in Mishnayos, that after you tell me everyone is chayav, and then you tell me Kohanim Levim Visraelim, the Kovoi Pshita, and the Gemara will be asking, in each case, it seems obvious that they are included. I Hanoch Lo Lechayvu Man Lechayev. If they wouldn't be chayav, then who would be chayav? So, as we see now how Rashi himself is sensitive to Gemara structure, we have tried to highlight this in a visual way using our markings. So from Gimel Amid Beis till Dalam Aleph, we will see these diamonds and the double underline with dots in it that we already showed will be highlighting the expressions over there, Kohanim Levim V'Yisraelim. So now we turn to the Gemara itself. Each one of these triangles represents a Tanaic source in which these openings appear. So number one, Hakol Somchin Lasuye Mai. The Somchin is a reference to a procedure done when a sacrifice is brought to the Beis Hamikdash. The owner of the sacrifice is expected to put his hands on the head of the animal about to be sacrificed. That's called smicha. So the Mishnah there says, everyone is sonchen. So la'asuya, who is included in that everyone? Answer, la'asuya yoresh udalo k'Rabbi Yehuda. It comes to include someone who is an heir. In other words, someone who had dedicated a sacrifice, but before he brought it, an individual's father set aside a sacrifice, didn't bring it until he himself died. The heir brings his father's sacrifice, and when he brings it, he places his hands on it. Now, even though the pasuk refers to the owners bringing us doing this smicha, the hakul comes to say that the yoresh, the heir, the son, is considered the owner of it with regard to this halacha of smicha. And it's also pointed out in our Gemara that this is this inclusion of the yoresh as being someone who's bound to do the smicha is not in accordance with the opinion of Rav Yehuda, which will be featured very shortly in the Gemara. There's also a Mishnah that says, Hakol Memirin, that everyone can do Tmura. Tmura is a process regarding the replication of the sanctity of a particular korban onto another common animal. Common meaning non-sanctified animal. It's not important for us to get into the details of Tmura right now. There is, in fact, the next Masichta on the Daf Yomi cycle is dedicated to that issue. But for our purposes, this possibility of someone doing a Tmura, who is included when the Mishnah says, Hakol, everyone can do Tmura. So, La'asuye Mai, who is included? Answer, La'asuye Yoresh, Udalo, K'Rabbi Yehuda. Just like we said, Hakol Samchin comes to include the Yoresh, so too Hakol Memirin comes to include the heir, someone who whose father died, leaving a sacrifice, a korban that was as yet unslaughtered, wasn't offered yet. The father died before he had a chance to offer it. The son can effect a tamura using that animal as a base. We've highlighted the word yoresh with this crown shape in order to be able to focus on this machlokis tanoim regarding yoresh, pointing out that the Rabbanan disagree with Rabbi Yehuda regarding the yoresh. On the outside margin under our Nosei Mivne heading, we have featured this, and we wrote, machlokis Rabbi Yehuda v'chachamim b'inyan yoresh, b'smicha u'tmura. Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, yoresh eino somech veino meimir, an heir does not do smicha, nor can he effect a tmura. The Rabbanan, yoresh somech u'meimir. As our Gemara goes on, actually, before we go further in the Gemara, Rashi points out, with regard to smicha, the Torah uses the word korbonoi three times in the context of the placing of hands on a korban shlomim. So that word is available for droshes several times. We will see the significance of that very shortly in the Gemara. As we go on, the Gemara now gives us the source in which the Chachomim and Rabbi Yehuda appear regarding these topics. Desanya, Yoresh Somech, Yoresh Meimir. That's the opinion of the Tanakama. We'll refer to this as the Chachomim, that an heir does smicha, the hand placing, and an heir can replicate the sanctity of the korban that was set aside by his father and who died before this. The heir can do that replication. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Yoresh Eino Somech, Yoresh Eino Meimer. Now, what we have in our markings, you see a brackets. The bracket is indicated, the bracket length, in other words, the section of Gemara that we have placed in the brackets, its length is indicated by what we call a bracket length indicator. To the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a vertical dash dotted line. And if you follow this, you'll note it continues down the top lines of Omid Beis as well, around eight lines down from the top, the brackets closes. we try to explain, whenever brackets appear, what the role of the brackets are. In this case, you'll notice a little star which draws your attention to the inside margin, and we've written the following. Matras hasugrayim, the purpose of this bracketed section, eino l'shem dilug, is not for skipping. In Gemara markings, we use the brackets most often to indicate a section of Gemara that should be skipped initially to preserve the logic or reading flow. In this case, we're saying that the brackets are not designed for that purpose. Elo letachim, rather to show the boundaries to haketa shebo osekes haGemara b'ma loymed rebutiv rabbonim mikorbano, to show the boundaries, the length of the section of the Gemara in which the opinions of Rebbe Yehuda and the Rabbanan will be featured with regard to what they learn from the word korbono that appears in the Torah. We mentioned that in the Torah the word korbono appears three times in the context of smicha, of the placing of the hands on the head of a sacrifice. If you skip ahead to the point in Gemara after the brackets, you'll notice the triangles pick up, where we continue analyzing different Mishnayos, different mitzvahs, in which the Mishnah says everyone is chayav in, well, whatever, and we'll see that later. In the meantime, we now focus on the bracketed section, which deals with this machlokis, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, regarding how each one came up with their respective opinions, and what each one does with the words in the Torah that are relevant to this discussion. So the Gemara continues. My taima de Rabbi Yehuda. What is the basis, the reason for Rabbi Yehuda and his exclusion of Yoresh from Smicha and Tumura? The Gemara answers, Korbono. The word Korbono appears in the context of placing the hands on the sacrifice prior to its slaughtering. And it's a word that appears in a possessive, means his Korban. It's a word that we can define as limiting. And as a result, we say korbanot equals velo korban aviv, one's own sacrifice and not the sacrifice that was owned by his father. So we're excluding yoresh through that. Now, that's as far as smicha is concerned. V'yolif tchilas hegdish misof hegdish. Tchilas hegdish literally means the beginning of something's sanctity. When I do a tumura, tumura is the replication of sanctity from one animal onto another animal, that second animal is now experiencing sanctity for it for the first time. So that's called tchilas hekdish. Tmura is tchilas hekdish of that particular animal. The rules of tchilas hekdish are learned misof hekdish. Sof hekdish is a code for smicha. Why is smicha called sof hekdish? Because right before the animal is slaughtered, which basically is the end of its called sanctity period. It might have been dedicated for months as an actual sacrifice, so it was sanctified for a long time. At the point that you slaughter it and then eat it, so it's gone, it's finished. So, or in the case of other sacrifices, they're burnt on the altar, but it's very close to its end, to the end of its sanctity, in the sense that that's the end of the sacrifice. So the rules of that we're discussing right now are derived one from the other, so that the rules of Tmura are derived from the rules of Sof Hekdish, the rules of Smicha, which we know. Ma Sof Hekdish Yoresh Eino Somech, just like Sof Hekdish, which we said is Smicha, the Yoresh, the heir, doesn't do it, and that's as a result of the word Korbano, which appears in the context of Smicha. Af Tchilas Hekdish Yoresh Eino Meimir. So too with regard to Tchilas Hekdish, which we said is Tmura, the Yoresh does not do the Tmura. V'Rabbanan, the Rabbanan who said that a Yoresh does do the Tmura, Homer Yomir, the words in the Torah in the context of Tmura say Homer Yomir, a double expression. L'Rabos is HaYoresh. The double expression includes not only the owner of the actual initial owner of the Korban, but the Yoresh as well, the heir as well. So that the Rabbanan, as we saw before, say that an heir can effect a Tmura. V'Alfinon Sof Hekdish Mitchilas Hekdish. In a similar fashion, but in an opposite direction, the Rabbanan, following Rebbe Yehuda, say that we learn one realm from the other. In this case, we learn self-hekdesh, which is a code for smicha, that a yoresh can do smicha, we learn that mi tchilas hekdesh, from tmura. Ma tchilas hekdesh yoresh meimer, just like at the beginning of the sanctity, namely the tmura, a yoresh can do the tmura, as was learned from homer yomir, the double expression, af self-hekdesh, so to smicha, yoresh somech, the heir can do, or the heir is expected to do, the hand placing. V'rabbonon hai korbono mai avdilei. The little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text enables you to align this with the previous arrow. If you skim up, you'll see on that upper line the word korbono appeared. So the Gemara here is asking the Rabbonon, as opposed to Rabbi Yehuda, what did the Rabbonon do with the word korbono, which was Rabbi Yehuda's basis of excluding a yoresh from smicha? So the Rabbonon, who said a yoresh does do smicha, what do they do with that word, which we said was an exclusionary, limiting expression? Answer. And before we go on, it's important to us just to reiterate that the word korbano appears three times. So we have three korbano words written in the Torah in the context of a korban shlomim. So as we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice we have a little series of numbers, 1, 2, and 3, over the words korbano, because there are, in fact, three different appearances of this word. So the Rabbonon, what do they do with korbano? Answer, miboyale, they need it, korbano velo korbano vikuchavim, that the idol worshipper who brings a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash, his sacrifice doesn't receive this smicha process. Korbano velo korban chavero, the word is excluding the possibility of someone else doing smicha to his friend's korban. And three, korbano l'rabos kol bale choivrin l'smicha. If one person brings a korban that's a jointly dedicated sacrifice, all of the partners have to do smicha. They're all considered the owners of it. So that we've used up the three korbanos, and through that we see the Rabbonon's use of korbano, and none of the uses excludes a yoresh. Hence the Rabbonon conclude that a yoresh does do smicha. For Rabbi Yehuda, who excluded the yoresh based on that word, well, what's his response? L'rabois kol bale chovrin l'smicha. Notice we read that phrase together, all the words together, and we use our phrase marking to help us in the reading. This idea of including all partners of a korban for smicha leslay, he doesn't hold from that. Therefore, he doesn't use up korbano, as we just indicated in the number 3, couple lines up. He doesn't use up korbano, so it's available for Buda to exclude the heir. The inami islay, and even if you say that he holds that all partners are expected to do smicha, nevertheless, the word korbano will still be available for Rebbe Yehuda to exclude a yoresh. And how is that? Oveid kochavim, at the very top of Omid Beis, oveid kochavim v'chavero mechad kro nafki. The exclusion of an idol worshipper and one's friend from the realm of smicha are learned from one posuk. In other words, they're both considered outsiders with regard to the bringing of a korban. Namely, as Rashi says at the top, "Dein Yisrael somech al korban ovikachavim velo al korban Yisrael chavero." The fact that a Jew does not do hand placing on an idol worshipper's korban nor on his friend's korban are derived. Take both of these points are derived from one pasuk, so that whereas we saw the Rabbanan using up two korbono words for these two points, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't do that. He says both can be derived from one pasuk, from one of the korbono words. Aisri luhu trei. That would leave then two more korbono words for Rabbi Yehuda. Chad korbano velo korban oviv. That's the yoresh is being excluded. The idoch l'rabos kol bali chovrin l'smicha. The other one is including all owners of a korban, all partners in a korban, as expected to do smicha. Ve'Rebbe Yehuda, hai homer yomir mai ovid lei. You'll notice we have a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, and an indication that to look at Omid Aleph. If you turn back to Omid Aleph and skim up from the bottom till you find also to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text over there, a little star with an indication of Omid Beis, that will connect these two points together. The Gemara had made a reference to Homer Yomir over there as the basis of the Rabbonon in understanding that a Yoresh does do the Tmura, that a Yoresh is capable of doing Tmura. If a Yoresh tries to replicate the sanctity of the korban left by his father, it will take effect. Now, the question is, Rabbi Yehuda said that a Yoresh does not affect the Tmura. What does he do with the double expression? Rabbi Yehuda, hi, Homer Yomir, my Ovid Lei. The Gemara answers, Miboy Alei, Lerabois Esho Isha. To tell me that a woman can also create or affect a Tmura, a replication of sanctity. Desanya. And for a little more explanation, the Gemara cites a Tanaic source regarding this issue. When you look at the section in the Torah that deals with Tmura, you'll find it appears in the masculine form. Ma sofenu l'rabos es isha, will we come to include a woman also, a female in the realm of affecting a Tmura? Tamalomar vim homer yomir. The double expression comes to include a woman. V'rabonon mi v'im. They learn the inclusion of a woman from the vav of the word ve'im. Rebuta ve'im lo dorish. Rebuta does not darshan the vav in that word to have any significance. The emphasis in our explanation on the vav is based on a comment that one finds in the Tosfos, where that point is made. At this point, you see that the bracketed section closes. And the Gemara now picks up with the series of triangles that we started on Omid Aleph, at which point we had seen HaKol Soimchen, HaKol Memirin, and now we go on to other mitzvahs, and as they appear in their respective Mishnayos. HaKol Chayovim B'Sukkah La'Suyei Mai. The Mishnah says that everyone is bound to fulfill the mitzvah of Sukkah. Well, who is included in the HaKol over there? Answer, La'asuye Kotten She'eno Tzorach Li'imoy. Notice the double underline once again. We're continuing the use of this marking, as we indicated on Omid Aleph, to include what? So we're including here a Kotten She'eno Tzorach Li'imoy. Notice we have a phrase marking around those four words to help you read them together. A minor, a kotten, he's under bar mitzvah, who is of an age that he doesn't need his mother. The Gemara in Sukkah describes this as a certain age when a child wakes up at night and doesn't start to call mommy, mommy in a rambling fashion. If he doesn't do that, if he doesn't call out, scream out, mommy, mommy in this rambling fashion, he is called a kotten she'eno tzorach li'imo. Disnan, the Mishnah says, kotten she'eno tzorach li'imoy, chayov b'sukkah. So he's included in those that are expected to fulfill the mitzvah of Sukkah. Of course, it's not an age where it's of a Torah level obligation, but nevertheless there is a rabbinic obligation of seeing to it that such a child is fulfilling the mitzvah of Sukkah. We continue. HaKol Chayovim b'lulav. Everyone is included in the mitzvah of lulav. What is the HaKol expression coming to include? Lasuye mai. Answer, Lasuye koten hayodea lenanea. This comes to include a child who knows how to shake the lulav, which is part of the lulav requirements when it comes to the holiday of Sukkot. Disnan, the Mishnah says, Koten hayodea lenanea chayov belulav. A child who knows how to do this, how to do the shakings, there are different positions. It's not just a matter of holding it and shaking it, but there are different positions in how to do it, as is referred to in the Gemara in Maseches Sukkah. So we understand now what HaKol Chayovim B'Lulav comes to include. Continuing, HaKol Chayovim B'Tzitzis, La'asuye, Mai, what is being included in that? In referring to the mitzvah of tzitzis, answer, La'asuye, Koten Hayodelis Atev. A child who knows how to cloak himself in the talis garment, desanyo, katan hayodelis atev, chayov betzitzisiv. He's that of that age that he knows how to wrap himself around in the garment containing the four corners. He is of age to be bound to this mitzvah. Hakol chayov betfilin, lasuye mai. The expectation of everyone being committed to fulfill the mitzvah of tefillin, who is being included? Lasuye koton hayodea lishmor tefillin. It's coming to include a koton, a minor, who knows how to guard the tefillin. Desanya, koton hayodea lishmor tefillin, oviv lokeach lo tefillin. If a child is of age, he knows how to be careful with regard to tefillin. Tefillin is a holy religious article, and there are rules that apply to the proper care of the tefillin, without getting into details, because this isn't really the focus of our discussion, but whatever those rules are with regard to the proper care and awareness that one must have when wearing tefillin. If he is aware of that, then his father buys him a pair of tefillin. He's expected to fulfill tefillin. Hakol chayovim b'ri'iyah lasuye mai. Everyone is included in the mitzvah of ri'iyah. Now, ri'iyah is a reference to the three major holidays on the Jewish calendar: Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. These are three holidays when the men folk of the Jewish people were expected to come to Yerushalayim with different korbanos. Amongst the korbanos he was expected to bring is a korban ola, which is known as the olas re'iyah. So the Gemara here is making reference to the Mishnah that says everyone is obligated in appearing in the Beis HaMikdash on the three major holidays. Who is included in this hakol? As you can see, as we go on in the Gemara, we're keeping on with our use of the double underline, but you'll also notice Aleph, Beis, and Gimel over the next few Lasuye words. There are different opinions that revolve around this particular mitzvah of Re'iyah, and according to each opinion, we'll be asking who is being included. So the first approach says, "Lasuye mi shechetzio eved vechetzio ben chorin." This is coming to include an individual who is half slave and half free. As a freed slave, a person has the status of a Jew. Here is a case of a Gentile who was bought by, let's say, two individuals. He was jointly owned by two owners, two Jewish owners, and one of the owners freed, was Meshachrer his share in the Eved, leaving this Eved as partial Eved and partial Ben Chorin. So a person like that, if he had been a full-fledged Eved, he would not have been Chayav in Mitzvah Re'iyah. But as a partially freed Eved, he is Chayav. That's the first opinion. The Gemara continues, Ulo Ravina, di Omar, mi shechetzio eved chetzio ben chorin, poter min ri'iyah. We've circled Ravina's name for easy reference later on when we want to cite his opinion. According to Ravina, that says someone that's of a half status as well is exempt. So what does Hakol Chayov b'ri'iyah come to include? La'asuye chigir b'yom rishon v'nispashik b'yom sheni. This is a reference to a person who on the first day of these holidays, with the exception of Shavuos, the Pesach and Sukkot are 7-day holidays. Let us say someone was lame on the first day. He was a chiger. As a lame individual, he can't walk to the Beis HaMikdash. And the holidays are referred to as Shloishes Regolim. Regolim is a code for holidays, but it also has a literal meaning, walking. So a person was lame, is incapable of, the Torah is basically excludes him from this mitzvah. Let us say the person was lame only on the first day, but his leg problem got straightened out on the second day or on one of the subsequent days of the holiday. So we're told here that Hakol Chayov Miriah comes to include someone who was lame on the first day, but on one of the subsequent days got better. So since it's a 7-day holiday, he is to fulfill the mitzvah later on during the 7-day period. So we have a use of the word of Hakul as far as Ravina is concerned. However, the Gemara points out that this too is a controversial issue, and the use of Hakol to include as bound, as Chayav, this example is itself dependent on two opinions, and therefore it will work out only according to one of the two upcoming opinions. And if but as far as the other opinion regarding this topic, which we'll explain again very shortly, we'll still be left with the question of what does Hakol Chayav Mbriya come to include. So the Gemara says, Ha Nicha, this explanation that Hakol Chayav Mbriya comes to include the Chigir B'yom Rishon V'chnis Bashit B'yom Sheni L'man D'yomar, according to the opinion that Kulon Tashlumin Ze Lo Ze, that each one of the days of the 7-day holiday period, both Pesach or Sukkot, that each one of those days is a makeup opportunity for the immediate preceding day. So that I can say, if he was not fit on the first day, the second day or a subsequent day is a makeup for his situation on the previous day. So that if each one is a tashlum, is a makeup for the immediate previous day, so I can say that if he becomes fit on a subsequent day, he's now in the position to make up that which he couldn't do on the previous day. Ela lemandomer kulon tashlumin l'rishon, but if you say that all of them are makeup days for the first day, if on the first day he was exempt, he will no longer be chayav, because each subsequent day is simply a reflection of what he was on the first day. Let us go over this again with a more accurate explanation. When we say kulan tashlumin ze lo ze, that means that each day is a chance for him to make up that which he should have done on a previous day. So that if on the, let us say, the first day of the holiday he wasn't fit, on the second day he was fit, but didn't come on the second day. So we would say that the third day he should use as a makeup for what he could have done on the second day. And likewise, the fourth day is a makeup for what he could have done on the third day, had he been fit. However, the other opinion says that each one of the days is simply a chance to make up what he should have done on the first day. However, if on the first day he was exempt, so then this person remains exempt for the entire period, because each of the subsequent days is a reflection of what could have been done or should have been done on the first day. However, if on the first day he shouldn't have done anything, so the subsequent days also maintain that status of exemption, even though he may physically be able to fulfill the mitzvah on one of those subsequent days. So according to that opinion, that kulon tashum in the rishon, the hakol chayav mriya lasuye mai, what does it come to include? Answer, lasuye suma bachas me'enov udelo ki haitana. It comes to include as being chayav, as being bound, someone who is blind in one eye, unlike the following Tanaic opinion. We're going to see a Tanaic opinion in a moment that says that someone who is blind in one eye is actually exempt from the mitzvah of Re'iyah. So if we want to say that Hakol comes to include as obligated someone who is blind in one eye, we have to say that it is not, that opinion reflected in the Hakol Chamriya is not like the following opinion, which exempts such a person. The Sanya, the following frame section contains the source, the Tanaic authority that exempts a person blind in one eye. Yochanan ben Davoy Omer Mishum Rabbi Yehuda. Yochanan ben Davoy says in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, Suma v'achas me'enov poter min hori'iyah. Someone who is blind in one eye is exempt from the mitzvah of re'iyah. Now, how does he know that? Shinemar, the pasuk appears in the Torah using the word spelled out Yud Reish Aleph Hey, and the way the word is read, when you put in vowels, it comes out as Ye Ro'eh. So there, the word appears in a without vowels, as everyone knows, the Torah has no vowels. And if left on our own, we would have read the word as yireh. Yireh means to see. Yeroeh means to be seen, like to be received by someone, to be seen by. So that you have in the Torah the phenomenon of the word without vowels, and the way it's read. Many, many times in the Torah, words are read because of an oral tradition other than the way the letters appear. So that in this case, we're saying that the Shenemar, our Gemara Shenemar, Yireh, Yeroeh. And what we're trying to say is that the presence of the word in a written form would have led me to read it a certain way, but then there's the way it is actually read, and that's read in a different way. As we just illustrated, there's Yireh, is the way the word would have been read had I been left on my own, and being that there's an oral tradition, I don't read it that way, but rather I read it as Yeroeh. From this we learn that we will emphasize both readings. Kederech shebo liros, as one comes to see something, to view something, kach bo leiros, so too he must come to be seen. What do we mean by that? Ma liros b'shtei enov, the Almighty comes to see, to view his people. The Almighty is perfection. Perfection in this case is a reference to to sight in both eyes. Full, complete sight is where one sees with two eyes. So just like the Almighty, it represents perfection. He comes to see with his two eyes, so to speak. Af leiros, those people who are coming to be seen, namely the Jewish people coming to fulfill the mitzvah of Aliyas HaRegel, b'shtei enov, he too must have sight in both eyes. So this Tanaic source shows, or is of the opinion, that blind in one eye is exempt because he doesn't come to be seen with his two eyes. However, we said above, HaKol Chayav Mariyah comes to include a person who has sight only in one eye. So we're saying that the Tanaic source saying HaKol Chayav Mariyah is not in accordance with this particular opinion. The Iboy Seimo, an alternative approach, La'olam la'suyei, mi shechetzio eved v'chetzio ben chorin. Notice we have a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. This aligns with the arrow we saw above, where we in fact we suggested that Hakol Chayoven comes to include someone who is partial slave. We also should note, before we read any further, we have a long answer marking that accompanies this. This is represented by the tuf that you see encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. All of these lines contain information relevant to this answer. So the Gemara says that HaKol Chayav Mariyah really does come to include the Chetzi Eved Chetzi Ben Chorin individual. Udeko Kashya loch to Ravina, you might ask, well, but according to Ravina, he is exempt. So how can you say HaKol Chayav Mariyah comes to include him? Lo kashya, that is not a problem. Kan b'mishnah rishoino, kan b'mishnah achroino. Ravina's exclusion is a reference to an earlier mishnah, mishnah rishon, an earlier state, as far as mishneiach halacha is concerned. And the rabbis, the chatzi evet, to the inclusion of him is based on the teaching of a later mishnah or a later state, as far as mishnayos are concerned. Disnan. Now, this reference to an earlier and later mishnah is contained in the following Tanaic source, and we will see shortly that earlier and later both revolve around the opinion of Beis Hillel. The source begins here. Mi shechetzio eved v'chetzio ben chorin. Someone who is half slave, half free. Oyvedes rabo yom echad. That's atzmo yom echad. Divrei Beis Hillel. He then works for himself. Any income he gets on a given day, on one day, is for himself, is for his master, and on the subsequent day, for himself. And he works this way on an alternating basis. One day, his income, whatever he produces, will be for his master. On the subsequent day, for himself. Omru lohem Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai addresses Beis Hillel and says, Tikantem es Raboi. you have made things fit for his master. In other words, the remaining partner continues to benefit from his eved in a reasonable way, as he always benefited from him. The es asmo lo tikantem, however, for the eved himself, regarding his personal status, you haven't fixed things. You haven't dealt with that. Namely, before he was freed, when he was a full eved, he was owned as an eved by two owners, that man could have married a shivcha. This is a Gentile woman who became a shivcha, was sold into maid servant status. He could have married her, they being both of the same legal classification. However, now that he is a partial eved, he has no woman that he can marry. Lisa shivcha eino yachol. To marry a shivcha he cannot, because of his half that's free. Free, and as we mentioned earlier, when an eved kenani is freed, he becomes a full-fledged Jew, and he's not allowed to marry a shivcha. Likewise, bas chorin eino yachol. He can't marry a free woman either, because of his half status that classifies him as an eved. Ivatel, simply not to marry at all, that's also not an option. The world was created with a major focus on reproduction. Shinemar, the Pasuk says in Yeshaya, lo sohu v'ra, lo sheves yitzara. Tohu is a state of a void. The world was not created to be a void without multiplication. Lo sheves, for habitation, it was formed. Elo mipnei tikun ha'olam koifin es raboi va'oisa oisoi ben chorin. So, because of something called the improvement of the world, tikun ha'olam, improvement of the world, and that is accomplished by reproduction, we force the master, the one who, the remaining partner who had his half share in this eved, we force him to free him. The koisef shtar achatzi domov, and the eved will write an IOU regarding the half that was owned by this person, and as when he gets freed, he'll then amass the money, the necessary funds to pay, to compensate the partner that was forced to free him. The Chazru Beis Hillel Lahoros Kedivrei Beis Shammai. And with this in mind, the Beis Hillel accepted this ruling of Beis Shammai. Now, what does that mean for us? That a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin, since he is inevitably going to become a full freed individual, we can say that prior to his receipt of the freeing, the release document, since it's a legal inevitability, he is also bound to the mitzvah of re'iyah. But that's, of course, because Beis Hillel, at a later point, accepted Beis Shammai's point of view. Hakol chayavim b'tkiyas shofar. To say that everyone is bound to the fulfillment of shofar blowing, who is included? This comes to include a minor who has reached an age where he can be educated. We have a Mishnah in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that says that if a child is blowing a shofar to gain skills in that experience of shofar blowing, we don't stop him. So we see that a child, when he reaches a certain age of education, he is connected to the mitzvah of shofar. Hakol chayav b'mikra megillah, hakol ksherim lukrois es ha-megillah. These are two mishnayos that focus on the megillah reading obligation. So who is hakol coming to include? La'asuye mai. We're at the top of the Af Gimel Amud Aleph. Who is being included? The Asuye Noshim Uch Rabbi Shua Ben Levi. We're coming to include women in accordance with Rabbi Shua Ben Levi's ruling. Now, there's just a word of introduction. The Megillah is a mitzvah which is time bound, and being that it's a mitzvah that is time-bound, based on a sugya in Maseches Kiddushin, women are exempted from those types of mitzvahs, with some exceptions. Being that that's the case, I would think that women are excluded from Mikra Megillah. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi comes to tell us, the Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Noshim Chayyotos b'Mikra Megillah, She'af Hein Hoyu b'Oysu HaNes. They were part of the miracle of the Purim story. They are therefore also included in the mitzvah. And as far as the Purim story is concerned, the ruling, the edict to destroy the Jews included men and women as well. So their salvation from that edict, a result of the miracle which was wrought by Esther as well as Mordechai, binds the women to celebrate Purim through the reading of the Megillah. Now, there is an interesting issue when we say that they're chayav in the reading of Megillah. Rashi says they can also exempt men, meaning a man listening to a woman's reading, he would thereby be exempt or fulfill his obligation through her reading. It should be pointed out that this is the subject of a discussion which one will find in the Tosfos, which is something that one can look into on their own. The list of Mishnayos that are introduced by the Hakol expression continue. As you can see, many more triangles appear if you have Daf Gimel Amud Aleph in front of you. And as we said, this continues to Gimel Amud Beis. But with that, we conclude our Shiur for today.